This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The Nigeria Center for Disease Control confirms 213 cases, including 42 deaths, in what is seen as the largest outbreak in West Africa.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from WHO headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up also. Nigeria's presidential election campaign is coming to an end, with just over a week left before the February 16th vote. And a top U.S. military official says Russia is working to gain leverage and resources in Africa. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, the World Health Organization reports it is scaling up efforts to try to control an outbreak in West Africa of the Lassa fever, which is escalating at a rapid pace. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
West Africa is in the midst of a seasonal outbreak of Lassa fever, which usually flares between December and March. The disease is endemic in the region, so the current outbreak was expected. But WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says what is alarming is the scale and speed with which the disease is spreading.
Right now, since the beginning of the outbreak until now, so we already have one-third of number of cases that we had last year, and already last year was the biggest Lassa fever outbreak. So basically, we are seeing more cases than usual.
Nigeria declared an outbreak on January 22. The disease so far has affected 16 states. The Nigeria Center for Disease Control confirms 213 cases, including 42 deaths, in what is seen as the largest outbreak in West Africa. While Nigeria is the source of the most anxiety, WHO reports a total of 12 cases, including two deaths, have been confirmed in Benin, Guinea, Liberia, and Togo, with more suspected cases being investigated. Lassa fever is an acute viral hemorrhagic illness that occurs after human exposure to the urine or feces of infected Mastomys rats. It is also transmitted person to person. About 80% of those infected show no symptoms. The disease can be effectively treated in its early stages with the antiviral drug ribavirin. Jazarevich says the Lassa fever season is expected to last another 4 months. He tells VOA it is crucial that communities take certain preventive hygienic measures.
For example, storing grain and other food in rodent-proof containers, disposing of garbage far from the home, maintaining clean households and keeping cats, for example. Because this particular type of rat is abundant in endemic areas, it's not really possible to completely eliminate them from the environment.
Jazarevich says the WHO is intensifying its technical assistance, enhancing surveillance, and mobilizing experts to the region to support case management and infection prevention and control. He says the agency is also supporting prevention and readiness activities in six other countries at risk of outbreaks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigeria's presidential election campaign is coming to an end with just over a week left before the February 16th vote. Despite a flood of candidates, it appears to come down to a two-man race. VOA's Peter Cloete is there to cover the election, and he gives my colleague Paul Alexander a look at how things are shaping up for the country's 190 million people.
The ruling party, the APC, will be having its campaign at the Lagos Stadium in Surulere tomorrow. The president, incumbent president Muhammadu Buhari, Vice President Yemi Osinbajo, and officials, top officials of the All Progressive Congress will be there. Initially, they had wanted to close all roads, about 18 roads that led to the stadium, but on second thought, the government in Lagos reviewed it, and under the direction of the ruling party, they reviewed the plan, and they are not going to close any of the 18 roads that initially was scheduled to be closed. So it is three. Organizers are saying about 100,000 people are expected to be present at the stadium during the campaign. And this will be the last campaign for the APC ahead of the February 16 general election.
So who is the favorite to challenge Buhari for his re-election bid?
Well, the only person who can pose any threat at all or any challenge is Atiku Abubakar of the main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, or the PDP. However, supporters of the APC that I spoke with are confident that the man they call the incorruptible man, President Muhammadu Buhari, will win one touch, they said, despite people from the PDP saying that they are winning this time around.
How has Boko Haram's resurgence affected Buhari's prospects?
So far, local reports I'm hearing is that the government put in measures in spite of the recent surge of activities of Boko Haram. The president, when he came in, some of these Boko Haram terrorists were controlling a lot of swaths of communities and land. Now, although their activities have shot up, they are not controlling these kinds of areas they used to control anymore. So they are saying there seem to be a significant improvement in the security in those areas up north. However, critics are saying that he promised to defeat them totally and that he has not been able to defeat them as he promised.
What are the other key issues?
Well, the other key issues are infrastructural. The need to have free, fair, transparent, and credible election. Former Liberian President Johnson Ellen Sirleaf is in town. She met the chairman of INEC, or the Independent National Electoral Commission, and they had a talk. And she said she wanted to understand the process to ensure that the process runs smoothly. And there were initial reports that the election could be postponed, but the chairman of INEC came out strongly saying that it would not be postponed and that it will proceed as originally scheduled on February 16th. So everything seemed to be going on smoothly.
Are there concerns about violence or cheating?
Well, there were initial reports and fears that there could be violence. However, security officials I've spoken to here in Lagos say they are on top of issues and that anybody who tries to create any, you know, try to carry out any violence or anything will be dealt with accordingly. I will give you this, an insider scoop. During a cabinet meeting recently, the president told officials that if any one of them is caught using state funds or the government funds to campaign and he is caught or she is caught, they will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
That was VOA's Peter Kloti in Lagos speaking with Paul Alexander. A top U.S. military official says Russia is working to gain leverage and resources in Africa. The commander of U.S. Africa Command, General Thomas Waldhauser, told U.S. senators yesterday that while Russia seeks access to African resources, its biggest inroads have been in building influence,
especially in areas where not, or especially in areas where they could say that the United States or the UK or Western partners are perhaps backing away from Africa. It's, I think, clear that their strategy along the northern part of Africa, southern part of NATO, if you will, the Mediterranean, to have influence inside Libya, for example, the relationships across that country, they want to have across the continent, they want to have influence on the continent.
Waldhauser also indicated that as China expands its economic relationship with African nations, there is concern it also will become more ambitious militarily on the continent. He said that for the Department of Defense, it is essential to maintain good relationships in Africa.
I think that one of the things that we do from the DoD perspective is we try to just show and just be good partners. And when Secretary Tillerson was there a year or so ago, or whenever the visit took place, I believe it was a year or so ago, you know, he talked about we need to work with the governments of those countries to make sure the arrangements they make are in their best interests.
China has one military base in Africa, in Djibouti, but Waldhauser says Beijing may want to expand that number as the Chinese economic presence grows.
So they certainly have their eyes on other facilities. Ports, for example, are a key to what would facilitate their not only mineral extraction, but their markets for their goods to come into the continent as well.
The bottom line, Waldhauser said, if we want to maintain influence, we kind of need to up our engagement. 15 past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. In 2001, the government of Nigeria, along with all African Union countries, pledged to spend 15% of its annual budget on health care. But the country has never come close to reaching that goal. The result is that up to 70% of medical spending in Nigeria is out of pocket, forcing many with sudden health problems into debt and poverty. Timothy Obizu reports from Abuja.
Ajayi Taiwo was involved in a car wreck a year ago that injured his right leg and pelvis 3 weeks before his wedding. Today, he's still recovering.
I actually spent like close to two months in the hospital. And all the resources that we have gathered together for the wedding to make it good actually went into hospital bills.
The government hospital where Taiwo was taken would not grant him discounts promised under Nigeria's national health care plan. So he had to sell his car and other valuables just to pay for care.
Imagine I went to a government hospital and I was paying heavily as if I was in a private hospital.
In 2001, Nigeria, along with all African Union countries, pledged to spend 15% of its annual budget for health care, the so-called Abuja Declaration. But 18 years later, Nigeria's highest ever budget share for healthcare was just 7%. Last year, it dropped to less than 4%. The impact is that 70% of hospital spending in Nigeria is out of pocket, pushing Nigerians like Ajayi into debt or poverty.
Having to pay out of pocket is a huge, huge devastating effect on any family. I mean, you've got to look out for food, first of all, for the family, school fees, and other things, just basic things to live. And that's why you find that a lot of people that end up in hospitals come only when it is late, simply because they don't have the funds.
Neka Oji is a financial officer in Nigeria's Ministry of Health. She explains that the government is partnering with international and private affiliates to make healthcare more affordable.
Our out-of-pocket health expenditure was estimated at over 70%. And even the estimate we have for 2017 is even higher. So our goal is to use the strategy from the basket funding and making sure we pay for a basic minimum package of care to reduce the high out-of-pocket expenditure.
But until Nigeria dramatically increases its healthcare budget, patients like Tai will likely face a struggle to stay healthy. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
This was not South African President Cyril Ramaphosa's first State of the Nation address since becoming president after he forced out President Jacob Zuma. But this was the new president's first address as he launched his bid to be elected to the office later this year. Ramaphosa detailed his policies and set the next election date. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa took full advantage of his national audience as he made his second annual address as president. His two-hour State of the Nation speech Thursday evening spanned so many topics in such minute detail, one local media outlet tried to boil it down to just the major points, but ended up with 17 of them. A prominent columnist described President Ramaphosa as a policy nerd. But the businessman and longtime political operative had no trouble identifying his priority in a nation where the unemployment rate recently surged past 27%.
Above everything else, we must get our economy working again. I call upon every South African to make this cause your own. Because when we succeed, and if we do indeed, as we must, it is the entire nation that will benefit. Now, as government, as business, as labor, as all our citizens,
Let us unite and embrace tomorrow.
Ramaphosa came to office just ahead of his State of the Nation speech last year, after unpopular former President Jacob Zuma was forced from office over a string of corruption scandals. Zuma was not among the former presidents who attended Thursday night's speech in Cape Town. Ramaphosa, who leads the ruling African National Congress Party, used his year in office to distinguish and distance himself from his predecessor. He now faces a test of his popularity as president, an election which he announced would take place in May. Ramaphosa read from an iPad, a stark contrast to Zuma, who often trudged slowly and painfully through stacks of paper while delivering speeches in a halting monotone. Ramaphosa touched on many issues plaguing South Africa, his aim to support and strengthen ongoing corruption inquiries into Zuma and other top officials, the struggle of the state energy provider, which he announced would be split into three entities, changes in education, healthcare, and public housing, and, in what has become the president's signature, his decision to appoint more committees to explore topics of national importance. Political analyst Daniel Silk, who spoke to VOA from Cape Town, said he felt the speech was effective, both in policy and politics.
I think what stood out was the comprehensive nature of the speech. It had many touch points, and I think that there was a sense of urgency and commitment that we had not seen before, possibly prompted not only by economic difficulties, but also by the fact that there is an election in May. And this particular State of the Nation address really did seem as though it was the launch of Cyril Ramaphosa's campaign for election.
And that's where opposition leader Musi Maimane, who heads the Democratic Alliance, found fault with it. Maimane, who is also running for president, criticized the typically precise president for being too vague and cautious. His party sent his remarks to VOA, which accused Ramaphosa of being under the thumb of the ruling African National Congress Party, the ANC.
Yesterday, people heard about plans that should have been implemented 10 years ago. They should have not been promises about another summit, another directorate. They should have been concrete steps, immediate steps. We need change and we need it urgently. And therefore, in looking at the State of the Nation address, more must be done. And what will happen is that the ANC still remains in charge, not Mr. Ramaphosa.
The ANC has won every national poll since South Africa became fully democratic in 1994. Although they are expected to do so again, in recent elections, the ANC lost ground to the opposition in major towns and cities. To gain back some of the high ground, Ramaphosa announced the resurrection of a special investigative unit focused on corruption. He also pledged, within 6 years, to provide every school child with a tablet, and, within 5 years, to build 500,000 subsidized housing units. And he slipped in a newsworthy detail that is key to his future and to South Africa's. The next general election, he declared, will be held May 8th. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Firefighters in Cape Town have been working around the clock since the start of the fire season in last November. Fires have been raging almost constantly, with the mother city's infamous winds causing blazes that spread quickly. City officials say massive tracts of land have been destroyed. From Johannesburg, Yashir Ramprasad has the story.
Authorities in Cape Town have their hands full, fighting fires and getting on top of water shortages. Fires have been raging in what's known as the Mother City almost every week since November. The cause of most fires has not been determined. But Cape Town's ferocious winds cause the blazes to spread quickly and keep them burning for days, despite firefighters' best efforts to extinguish them. James Brenstein is the spokesperson for the Western Cape local government.
The season has been particularly tough. The reason is that we've come out of the massive drought, so the veld is very, very dry. There's a lot of dead bush, a lot of dead trees. So when there's a spark and there's a lot of wind, as is the case in the Western Cape, it leads to a big crisis.
The fires have consumed scores of homes, overrun thousands of hectares of land, and damaged roads and other infrastructure.
Fires in the Western Cape has caused an estimated damage to public infrastructure and land of about 80 million rand over the past 6 months or so. This is still an estimate. The season is still ongoing. There's still a number of areas where the damage hasn't been completely collated. The estimated cost of tackling these fires over the same period is at around 30 million rand. That is the estimated cost of deploying the resources to fight the numerous fires we've seen.
Authorities have urged people not to throw cigarettes onto dry land and to be careful with anything flammable. Another problem is the water shortage in Cape Town and the Western Cape. Steyn says while dam levels are up compared with this time last year, people still need to save as much water as possible.
We see areas in the Western Cape a lot better off than others. The city of Cape Town, for instance, the average level of dam supply is at about 60%. Last year at this time, that level was less than 25%. So the situation has improved remarkably for the city of Cape Town and several other areas in the province. But the great concern lies with the Karoo region of the province, the rural semi-desert area, which is always a water-scarce region. That area is being severely affected by this ongoing drought.
The province's local government minister, Anton Bredell, says they've just received the green light for a project to bring water into the Karoo region. Known as the Blossoms Project, it basically amounts to linking a 22-kilometer pipeline and pumping infrastructure to existing boreholes in the Blossoms area.
We've decided to continue with the Blossoms Project. It's going to be a phased project. The first phase will cost us around about 50 million rand. The Department of Water Affairs and the National Disaster Management Center will make 30 million rand available between the rest of the partners. We need to get phase one up and running to secure water for the Klein Karoo. It's not only for the town of Oudtshoorn. So I'm very pleased that we will start as soon as possible with phase one of piping the water from the Blossom boreholes to the Klein Karoo water scheme.
While the situation in most parts of the province is much better than in the past 2 to 3 years, officials are not resting. Dams are not yet full. Many workshops and meetings have been held to brainstorm ideas of ensuring the Western Cape always has enough water, even during droughts. I'm Yashira Rampasad for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Today, Ugandan police released three journalists on bond who were working for the BBC and a Ministry of Health communication officer after a night in detention at Kampala's Central Police Station. The journalists were arrested while conducting what they say was a legitimate investigation into illegal sale of government drugs by Ugandan officials. The three journalists, two Ugandans and a Kenyan, were among a total of five people arrested in the incident. The others were the wife of a local journalist working with them and a driver. Police freed the five after determining the journalists were conducting a legitimate investigation. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. Coming up on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA, a discussion on vaccines and the so-called vaccination resistance movement. Our program will feature conversations with medical doctor and vaccinologist Dr. Peter Hotez and Christina Hildebrand, founder of an organization that advocates for vaccine and pharmaceutical product choice. Listen this Saturday and Sunday for the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Stand up!